Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time want-to-wanna-be gardener.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that considers it a priority to laugh at itself because, as any adult knows, that's the best way to maintain humility. Laughter of a particular kind is our theme this week as we tackle two different viewing opportunities, the first being a two-part biographical series offered by HBO Max titled Pee-wee as Himself, which is a study of the late comic performer Paul Rubens. The second is a darkly comic feature film starring the comedians Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd titled, simply if sardonically, Friendship. Let's begin with a look at the man who gained fame, some of which he ended up regretting, by adopting the alter ego of an obstreperous child. Born in 1952 as Paul Rubenfeld, the man known as Paul Rubens would achieve his greatest fame as the comic character Pee-wee Herman. The two-part documentary titled Pee-wee as Himself, which director Matt Wolff assembled from some 40 hours of interviews that he had conducted with Rubens before his death in 2023, is streaming on HBO Max. And it both explores Rubens' life and career, including his professional and personal ups and downs, but also keys on the pact with the devil, as he describes it, that he made to achieve his career ambitions. That pact involved his becoming the character of Pee-wee, which he had created while appearing with the Los Angeles-based improvisational comedy troupe The Groundlings. But his relationship with the character, which he parlayed into stage shows, movies, and for 5 years, an Emmy Award-winning children's television program, was such that, at times, it wasn't clear, certainly to the public but also to himself, where Pee-wee ended and Paul Rubens began. Whether you liked Rubens and his Pee-wee character may depend on what age you were when you first encountered them. It may also depend on how comfortable you are with the controversies involving him that affected and nearly derailed his career. Whatever, Wolff's documentary takes us inside the Rubens-Pee-wee blending and shows how a complex, talented, and committed performer achieved the success he dreamed of and the price that he paid for it.
Well, and I'll say right up top, we should be clear here that these are three big Pee-wee fans in the room, so we went into this documentary as fans. I will even say that two of the three of us have dressed up as Pee-wee before, but I'm going to leave it a mystery as to which of us it was.
But we have photo proof.
We sure do, but that's for blackmail material way down the road. I will say that I've been thinking about this since watching Pee-wee as Himself, just about what made Pee-wee Herman a special character. What is it about him that I love so much? And I've talked on the show about my love for his 1985 movie, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, directed by Tim Burton. But with that and Pee-wee's Playhouse and all of his one-man shows and his, you know, Letterman appearances in the 80s, I just think that what I like so much is that Pee-wee always seemed to be at the center of a world that was just like bursting with possibility. Even when it was just him on the Letterman couch and before Pee-wee's Playhouse was a thing that existed, you just got a sense that this character came from a very special world. He just had that absurdity and magic to him. That is, of course, if you find him particularly funny, because I know that he's nails on a chalkboard for other people. But because he was this grown man who behaved like a child, he was sort of able to straddle the line between, you know, kid show host and kind of like, in quotes, kid show host. And so he was, I think, both very retro, because he talks about it in this documentary, how he was influenced by Howdy Doody and Captain Kangaroo. He was,
and the circus in Sarasota,
yes,
Florida.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he was retro, but I think he was really ahead of his time in a lot of ways. And beyond everything else, Paul Rubens was just a brilliant physical comedian. And Pee-wee, I think, was just a brilliant physical creation. And as for this movie, Pee-wee as Himself, and it's a two-part documentary, in terms of its style and structure, it's pretty standard bio-doc stuff. And we've gotten a lot of these in the streaming era. And I always wish these movies that are about, you know, iconoclastic figures were as stylistically audacious as the people they're about, but I've kind of given up on that dream because they're always pretty much like this one is. But I did appreciate that this is not a cuddly portrait of Paul Rubens. We get to see a lot of his rough edges. We get to see him on camera having a hard time giving up complete creative control over this project. And it pretty much took him dying for the movie to be finished. If he hadn't died, maybe this movie never would have seen the light of day. And, you know, he was beloved. And, you know, the documentarian talks to people like Debbie Mazar and David Arquette, these people that were actually—
who were friends with him way back.
Yes, really close with him and were like his support system during all of the legal issues that he had. But it also seemed like he was very selective about who he let get close to him. And even then, a lot of those people that were close to him never knew that he was sick. And so you just kind of see, you know, this—
He created this facade.
Yes,
and it
in multiple ways. And so I thought that was really fascinating and made this documentary, PWS himself, a little more probing and thought-provoking than your typical, you know, wasn't this person great and genius kind of portrait that we get? There's some sharp edges to this one.
Yeah,
that I
and
appreciate.
I loved PB for a variety of reasons. So he's exactly my age. And I appreciated seeing sort of what influenced him as a Ute because it was the same TV programs and popular cultural activities that, you know, had an impact on me. Mm-hmm. And I think that the other thing that I really appreciated was the whole circus part of this.
Yeah.
Because then Pee-wee's
Big Top Pee-wee
made a lot more sense to me. And his family was so interesting. I mean, he came from this family that you would never necessarily think would produce this comedic genius.
No, his father,
you know,
helped form the Israeli Air Force.
Right,
and, you know,
exactly.
I mean,
it was so bizarre. But
I'm still stuck on the fact that you say you're exact same age. What, of Paul Rubens or Pee-wee? You know, I mean,
maybe both when you think about it, honestly. But yeah, so I appreciated that part of it maybe the most. But he has this deadpan delivery in dealing with the filmmaker Matt Wolff. And you can see, as you pointed out, that there's this tension that pervades the entire film or aspects of it. I did like, I mean, it's a talking head documentary in the sense that there are a couple people who sort of want to place him maybe in a larger filmography. But for the most part, it's people who know him, including people who knew him as a kid and so forth and so on.
And it doesn't shy away from the controversies. You know, he was arrested in 1991 for public indecency. And then later on
in a movie theater.
Yes, in Sarasota, Florida. And then later on, he got involved with the Jeffrey Jones child pornography case. And, you know,
I thought that was really shaky, though.
The movie pretty much proves or shows evidence that he was railroaded, at least in that second one. I also thought it was interesting that Wolf included snippets of people like Sam Kinison and Phil Hartman, who was once his friend and who helped him develop Pee-wee.
Yeah, and co-wrote Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Right, and how they turned on him.
I wanted more of that because there is a clip of Phil Hartman on Howard Stern sometime in the 90s saying like, oh no, Paul and I are estranged. And, you know, Howard Stern is kind of prodding him saying, is it because you feel like you didn't get enough credit for Pee-wee? And he essentially says, yes, that's exactly why. And that's on theme with what we were talking about, this idea that, you know, he keeps, Paul Rubens, that is, keeps talking in the documentary about, you know, as you said, in quoting him, I made this pact with the devil by I'm famous not as myself, but as this alter ego. It kind of seems like he was putting up those barriers in his personal life as well with people who he probably still loved and cared about, but pushed them away.
Well, it didn't talk about any of
them,
his intimate relationships.
And, well, he kind of had to do that. It points out that he had to hide the fact that he was gay for so many years because he never would have been,
particularly as a children's TV host.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but that's why I think it ended up being so ironic that they tried to link him to child pornography when, at least based on what we hear and see here, that there was no basis for that.
No.
And I think it was like clickbait.
They looked at the trove of stuff that he'd collected, and yes, there was some erotic material. A lot of it was gay themed, but there was no children's stuff there.
It kind of seemed like, because they, in this film, Pee-wee as himself, they're showing a lot of shots of his warehouses and his collections, and it seems like he was just collecting all kinds of stuff. That he loved knickknacks and weird memorabilia.
Right, and so we don't even know if he ever even looked at this stuff.
Yeah.
And more important, I like the fact that we saw him in his various incarnations, because he really was a beautiful boy in many respects. And he had this aspiration, perhaps, to go and be part of Andy Warhol's you know, factory scene and so forth. And he could have made that happen, but at different points, he looked like a totally, completely different person.
That that's also fascinating. And I think the first half of this two-part documentary is the more illuminating of the two, actually, because we get to see all of this footage of him before he ever joined the Groundlings, before he ever came to California. And you get to see him in these, like, almost like John Waters-esque experimental films a 20-something, these home movies of his life, these early tapings of the Pee Wee Herman show. I loved seeing all that stuff, and that's what makes this, I think,
special for fans. People weren't existing fans, if they would be as
I don't know,
taken with this as we were. But yeah, if you're a fan, if you enjoyed this in the 80s.
Oh, this is a must-see if you're a fan, I think. Yeah,
totally. At any rate, that was our discussion of the two-part HBO Max series Pee-wee as Himself. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to tackle the offbeat big-screen comedy Friendship. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the two-part streaming series, Pee-wee as Himself. Let's now turn to something that stretches the very nature of comedy, the bizarre study of a character played by the comedian Tim Robinson. If you're familiar with Tim Robinson, the comic performer who has been featured in a couple of series, Netflix's I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson being one, you'll likely be prepared for his appearance as a clueless, middle-aged guy in writer-director Andrew DeYoung's cringe comedy, Friendship. If not, you may feel as if you got lost in an extended episode of the Larry David series Curb Your Enthusiasm with all its uncomfortable moments. Robinson plays Craig Walter, a nerdy guy who, after reluctantly accepting the invitation to be pals by his new neighbor Austin, played by Paul Rudd, is surprised and angered when a thoughtless action on his part, an action that is typical of the way he stumbles through life, ruins the relationship. The comedy is of a type, dark and sarcastic, and depends a lot on how the lines are delivered by the cast, which includes Kate Mara as Craig's suffering wife. But it is Robinson who is the star, and his performance as Craig captures the very essence of male vulnerability, both funny and otherwise.
I really didn't know anything about Friendship before I went to see the movie. And so it was quite a surprise when we sat down and, you know, we saw the trailers and then we saw Nicole. And before the movie even started, people in this mostly full theater at the AMC started laughing and guffawing.
Well,
and so
mostly half full, but.
Well, it seemed full, but at any rate, maybe
they filled it with laughter.
Yeah, exactly. Good point, Dan. But started laughing, and we were sort of looking at each other like, what's going on? So I'm not sure that we appreciated fully going into this film what a cult following Tim Robinson has, because that's who showed up, at least in the screening that we saw. But you had mentioned that it's a cringe comedy, and you compared it to Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I honestly am about things that are painfully funny. And you know that sometimes you lasted only like 6 minutes watching Curb Your Enthusiasm and some other things where I was happy to hang in there. So maybe hanging in there is one of the things that some people will need to do in watching this film, Friendship.
Which is playing at the Magic Lantern also.
Yeah. The film puts us right in the middle of what we discover is a cancer survivor support group. So we know it's not going to be necessarily the comedian Anthony Jeselnik with his dead baby jokes, but we know it's going to be pretty dark or painfully funny or something, because Kate Mara, who improbably plays his wife, I mean, she wouldn't look at him for more than 2 seconds. We do find that she still has a thing for her old boyfriend, Devin, the firefighter. But so she's giving this sort of heartfelt talk about her personal experience, and then her dolt of a husband like chimes in and makes the whole thing about what he's gone through. And you're like, oh, no, no. But that's just the beginning of how people might react badly to what we see next, because the scenes with Paul Rudd are simultaneously funny and like way over the top in certain respects. And there's something that happens in this film that involves exploring this tunnel that was, I can't even describe it really, but
it's an adventure.
Right. It was an adventure. But on the one hand, this is cringy and difficult to watch. But on the other hand, friendship is, I believe, making some statements about men's friendships, men's ability to connect with one another, and what happens if you are the odd one out, even if justifiably so, you're the odd one out. Because honestly, just in the past couple of weeks, there have been articles in the mainstream, in the legacy media, about this issue of men's connection or lack thereof and whatever. Yeah, so it is making this larger statement, however ineptly it might be. And but I did, as time went on, I laughed more and more. I think Dan was like slinking down into his seat.
Yeah, and you know why those stories were. I've been in so many of these features meetings in which, hey, what's out right now? Hey, there's that movie Friendship. Let's do a story about men can't make friends, you know, so...
Just because you have a ton of friends, you're not the norm. I mean, I'm telling you honestly. So
no, I'm not the norm.
I'd like to get Nathan's perspective on this.
Yes.
Because
honestly,
many of the people who were laughing out loud at this film
were your age.
Were in your age cohort, but they were kind of the bro chatty guys, to my way of thinking.
And that wouldn't be me, is what you're saying. Yeah.
No. Well,
this movie was making me, as I was watching it unfold and wondering, where is this movie Friendship going next? And I was always wrong. I was trying to predict where it was going. I was always wrong because this movie is like one big non sequitur in a lot of ways. I was thinking about the nature of laughter, and I was paying attention in this movie to who was laughing and when and for how long. There were times where something would happen and like one person would laugh and laugh really hard.
And that would be me sometimes.
Me too. There were times in this movie where, and then I was thinking about like the timing of laughter, because there were times in this movie where something would happen and then it would take a couple seconds and I would start laughing and I couldn't even explain why. And then I would continue laughing into the next scene because I was thinking about the thing that had just happened. And I will say that I am not the world's biggest Tim Robinson fan. I did not go into this as a member of his cult. I've tried his show, I Think You Should Leave, on several occasions. And I find it sometimes to be extremely funny and other times to be extremely obnoxious.
He's such a nebbish. I mean,
But his shtick to me on that show at least sometimes becomes tiresome because a lot of the sketches are just him screaming at people. There's a certain point where I'm like, I don't know about this. But I was laughing a lot through Friendship, and there were often times where I was laughing and I don't know if I could explain exactly what was funny about it. And the choice to cast Tim Robinson as this seemingly average suburban dad with the wife and the teenage son, I mean, that sets the tone for the whole movie because everything about him as a performer is slightly off. And he's so prone to fits of random anger and violence, and the movie itself matches that tone. There are moments in Friendship where it starts to feel like, is this going to become a full-on horror movie? Like, what exactly is going on here? Yeah. And I agree with you, Mary Pat, that I think it is actually getting at something about the difficulty of making friends as an adult. There's this scene where Craig, the Tim Robinson character, hangs out with Austin, the Paul Rudd character, and his friend group. And he can't do anything right. And they have their own, like, internal language already. There's a point where they even break out into song. And he's just kind of sitting there watching. And the film is amping all of this up for comic effect, but there is something weirdly relatable about that. Like, I think we've all been in that scenario. And then you have Paul Rudd.
Minus the ugly outfits.
Well, I don't know.
Outfit.
Some of us dress better than others, but the Paul Rudd character, he's basically playing this like his character Brian Fantana from Anchorman. I mean, he's even a weatherman on TV.
Yeah.
Yes,
But he turns out to not be as cool as he lets on. There's also this, I think, brilliantly funny scene where Tim Robinson goes to the news station and realizes that his cool friend is like the uncool guy at work.
Right.
So I do think it is getting at just the absurdity of relationships and of friendships in general, these weird kind of rituals that we go through. But beyond all that, this is just an extremely bizarre, extremely singular kind of cult comedy.
And I do think that I should never try to go into sort of Yiddish territory, because I said he was a nebbish, and I think really he's kind of a schmuck.
Okay, sure. Yeah. What about, maybe he's a schmendrick as well?
Oh.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Okay.
All I can say is that, all right, you remember that there was a movie called Great Balls of Fire, and it was starred Dennis Quaid telling the story of Jerry Lee Lewis.
Where is this going now?
All right. Do you remember the scene in which he's marrying Winona Ryder?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the expression on Winona Ryder's face? It's like, that was
radio,
the expression. That was the expression that I had
visual here.
This entire movie. It was like, what is this? I don't get it at all. And there were a couple of times I laughed. I can't even tell you what I laughed at, but I did not laugh at the whole point of friendship between these guys. It was uncomfortable. It was, I thought, mean-spirited. And I just couldn't buy anything. You know, you talked about the Craig Walter character being married to the character played by Kate Mara. I'm going, in what alternative universe
would this ever happen?
Right.
That's what it makes no sense.
Well, because right. obviously they're trying to sell their house. So that's like sort of an ongoing premise here. So is he going to be in this neighborhood? Should he make friends with the Paul Rudd, who's his neighbor? What's happening with her? She goes missing at one point. And of course, we know that Devin in some way, her former boyfriend, is going to play a role in her reappearance and so forth. And the teenage son, I thought, was a nice addition with his girlfriend, who was totally expressionless through the entire film. Yeah, so it's just, I mean, he was definitely over the top, and there were parts of it I liked and appreciated.
In the first half of this program, we talked about Pee Wee Herman, and we talked about how it's a particular kind of comedy. You either get it or you don't. And that's the same way with this movie by Andrew DeYoung and Tim Robinson. You either get it or you don't. And, buddy, I did not get it.
And I just want to say that, you know, going into this movie not being converted to the genius of Tim Robinson, a lot of my friends really love him, and I just haven't been able to get into him. And I still enjoyed this movie. So I don't know what that says about me or him or this movie or
anything.
Or what
it says about me as a 70-something woman. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
You didn't even like the scene with the psychedelic frog. Or excuse me, the psychedelic toad.
No.
That was
no.
the best.
That was the best. Yeah, I thought it was really funny.
When he said, how long have you been involved in this like sort of psychedelic experience? For like 4 or 5 months, did you think? And the guy goes, no. And Tim Robinson goes, like 1 minute.
We just got a sandwich.
That was super funny.
Yeah, At any rate, that was our discussion of the big screen dark comedy Friendship. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weidenbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the two-part HBO Max biography, Pee-wee as Himself. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from Monty Python alumnus Eric Idle. Life doesn't make any sense, and we all pretend it does. Comedy's job is to point out that it doesn't make sense, and that it doesn't make much difference anyway. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.